Calling case number A210685 in the matter of the welfare of the children of CEN and BCK parents.
Excellent. And each side will have 15 minutes to argue, and appellant then will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. And so when you are ready, Mr. Mack, please proceed and state your name for the purposes of our record when you begin. Thank you.
Thank you. Attorney John Mack for appellant. The judge in this case based his ruling in large measure upon the presumption of unfitness set forth in Minnesota Statute 260C301 Subdivision 1-4. This was error. And the reason it was error is because the statute only permits the use of a prior termination from another state if the statutes of that state and the statutes of Minnesota are similar.
Mr. Mack, was this argument made before the district court?
I don't know, but the judge certainly indicated in his ruling that the statutes were similar. And it seems to me, too, that even if it wasn't made before the district court, failure to find that the statutes are similar or failure to be this similar is structural error. It's just so very important that our statutes align with the statutes of North Dakota, that even if it wasn't argued, and I'm not sure whether it was argued or not because I wasn't there, the statutes of Minnesota are so dissimilar from those of North Dakota that the termination in North Dakota should not have been used to raise the presumption in this case.
But Mr. Mack, what makes you so certain that the statutes have to be similar?
Because the law says so. The law specifically says is similar to a law of another jurisdiction.
Yeah, but shouldn't we be reading that to just modify the clause relating to parents' custodial rights to another child have been involuntarily transferred to a relative? I'm sorry, because there is no law cited with respect to the first part of the presumption paragraph. So if how it doesn't, I mean, so if you read, it is presumed that a parent is palpably unfit to be a party to the parent and child relationship upon a showing that the parent's parental rights to one or more other children were involuntarily terminated, or a similar law of another jurisdiction. That's the reading you're asking us to.
And I
know neither party raised that question, but I'm just wondering. But you can move on with your argument.
Okay. Let's compare the statutes of North Dakota with the statutes of Minnesota. The term similar or similar law is not defined in Minnesota law, and I can't find anything defining it in North Dakota law either. The closest I can come is to the criminal cases of the state of Minnesota, because it's not unusual for Minnesota to say that if there is a similar law violated in another state, DUI, for example, that can be used in Minnesota, but it has to be similar. One case that dealt with this is State v. Martin, which I cite in my brief, which says to determine whether or not a statute is similar, is it possible for the statute of the foreign state to result in a conviction where under those circumstances it would not result in a conviction in Minnesota? Importing that into TPR law, a statute of another state is similar for the purposes of TPR law if it would be impossible to convict a person or find them liable to TPR in the foreign state, but not in Minnesota. And that can't be the case here. First of all, we look to the North Dakota Century Code 2720441B, which is the termination law in North Dakota. And it says several things that Minnesota doesn't say. For example, paragraph D of 27.2044 states, the written consent of a parent acknowledged before the court has been given to a termination. That's different in Minnesota because North Dakota, unlike Minnesota, does not recognize a distinction between voluntary and involuntary terminations. So that if any ground for termination in North Dakota involves something that wouldn't be a termination in Minnesota, the statutes are not similar. Now look at some of the things that are different about North Dakota. One, the hearing may be held and the parent fails to make substantial, meaningful efforts to secure treatment for the parent's addiction, mental illness, behavior disorder, for a period equal to the lesser of 1 year or one half of the child's lifetime. Now remember, the child was removed from the home in North Dakota virtually immediately upon birth. Therefore, the parent could show no improvement over a period of 3 or 4 days. But in Minnesota, that wouldn't work. You'd have to show, for example, 6 months. Another thing that is different in North Dakota, you can terminate in North Dakota if the person subject to termination engages in conduct prohibited under section 12.
If I could interrupt you just for a minute here.
Sure.
Looking at the North Dakota order, you know, it's based on your client's failure to follow progress on the recommendation made by social services for reunification. She continues to struggle with her sobriety and had positive drug tests since the child was removed from her care. Continued to engage in unhealthy relationships. I mean, those were the grounds cited by the North Dakota court. And that sounds very familiar to orders with regard to termination of parental rights in Minnesota, yes? And there are differences in statutes, but perhaps, you know, different wording, different whatever, but I think the district court judge used the word gist. Isn't the gist the same? And wouldn't it be the same kind of conduct that Minnesota would be looking at?
No, Your Honor, because the statute says a similar law of another jurisdiction. The respondent, and right now you are arguing the facts, but the facts are irrelevant to this argument. The law does not say a similar fact situation of another jurisdiction. It says a similar law of another jurisdiction.
Well, so, Mr. Mack, then let's turn back to the statute itself and whether we should, that language actually does modify the provision that you're referring to, the involuntary termination, because let's read that sentence together. And I have it up on my computer. Hopefully you do too, or have a paper version. I actually have both, but because you never know if the computer is going to be working. But it says, it is presumed that a parent is palpably unfit to be a party to the parent and child relationship upon a showing that the parent's parental rights to one or more children were involuntarily terminated or, and I think or is key here, that the parent's custodial rights to another child have been voluntarily transferred to a relative under Minnesota statutes 210 section 260C, and it lists two different sections, or a similar law. So, or is generally just disjunctive. Would you agree with that?
It generally is, but it depends upon what it modifies. And I think that we're talking about, there was no transfer to another relative, and therefore—
Exactly. And here, the list of laws relates to a transfer to a relative. So, or a similar law logically refers to the things before it, which are statutory provisions relating to a transfer to a relative. And then, so that flows logically, but particularly given that the part of the sentence relating to the termination has an or before it, I I don't think it follows accepted grammatical rules to read that or a similar law of another jurisdiction to modify the involuntarily terminated language.
Well, how could it be otherwise? Because, for example, suppose you have a state, Mississippi or something like that, saying that you can involuntarily terminate if the child has a parent of a mixed race. We wouldn't pay any attention to that, would we?
But Mr. Mack, under our Supreme Court's opinion in RDL, which I think you've cited.
Yes.
I mean, there are constitutional rights. So obviously, independent of whether it's put in a statute or not, I mean, the same issue with convictions from other states and what that does. I mean, there are constitutional rights. So if parental rights were terminated in another state and due process wasn't followed or some other constitutional right, equal protection was violated, I mean, that could be raised and considered, even though it's not right there in the statute.
Well, that's certainly true. But I can't imagine how the legislature could have written a law that would have said, or conduct that occurs in another state, whether it results in an adjudication or not. And I think that's the problem, Judge Cochran, with your reading of the statute. There has to be some kind of due process in the other state. And that due process, therefore, has to conform to the words as similar law of another jurisdiction. I'd like to move on, if I may, to the issue of whether or not she has met the RDL, because she has substantially made attempts in the course of her treatment and in the course of her life to better herself. She's had many treatments. She does well in treatment. She has problems often after she gets out of treatment, but she's obtained mental health counseling with a therapist. She's not had amphetamines or has not been addicted for 3 months.
But wait a minute. How do we know that? I mean, where's the evidence of that? Yeah, but the district court judge decided that that was not credible. She didn't go in for drug tests. There's no evidence she was actually in counseling since North Dakota. Isn't that right? She missed intakes and assessments. How do we I know I said this in the last argument too, but help us out. How is that not reweighing the evidence? And isn't it for the district court judge to assess credibility and to weigh the evidence?
Well, the judge has to have some evidence, though. She testified that she has not used drugs in the last 3 months. There's no prior or contradictory evidence to that. So the judge can't simply say, I don't believe you, because lack of belief does not make up for lack of evidence. And the other good things that she's done.
But she had a positive test on February 23, correct?
Yes, but that was a long ways away from the hearing. Furthermore, the positive test was a hair follicle, and you can have methamphetamines apparently in a hair follicle for 120 days after you've used methamphetamines.
Is that evidence in the record, Mr. Mack? The length of time in which, and can you cite to us where in the record we can find that? Because I thought your brief cited to a website, and I didn't see it in the record, but I might have missed it. So if you could point us.
I thought it was in the record, but I could be wrong too. A fairly substantial record here. She's requested additional treatment after it was recommended. She had previously a year of sobriety. She has housing in the city of Breckenridge. And even the judge admitted stable housing wasn't terribly important in this case because people move around, particularly poor people who have to find jobs and treatments when they can. She has gone to meetings. And finally, let's talk best interests. She's gotten along well with her daughter. She appears to be a loving mother. She's an intelligent person. She has a grandmother who does a lot of the treatment in this case. I have a very important case coming up on that, but this indicates that of the three-part test, it's in her interest and the best interest of the child to be with the mother. This is not a mother who should be deprived of a child under these circumstances. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mack and Mr. Franzese. Proceed when you, let's make sure the clock is up there. Oh, no, we need 5 minutes, Marshall. Oh, 15. I'm sorry, I was on rebuttal. I'm
muted.
Thinking about our last argument. All right, my apologies. Please proceed, Mr. Franzese, and just identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Your Honor. Matthew Francis, Traverse County Attorney here on behalf of the respondent. And I should note, should have said this ahead of time, but I have a computer monitor off to my right where I was keeping notes and stuff, and I had the papers down below. So I always wish I could turn off the camera because I know it's somewhat distracting if I'm bopping around. But in looking, addressing the arguments that counsel made and that Your Honors and some of the questions Your Honors had, with respect to the issue of the North Dakota law and Minnesota law, there was no argument about North Dakota law being inappropriate or being somehow inapplicable to Minnesota law. It was generally—
I'm just curious, that North Dakota determination was by default, was it not?
It was by default, Your Honor, but there was substantial findings that were made. So it was not just— when you look at the order, it was clear the court did not just say, okay, she didn't show up, hasn't participated, so we're going to default her or terminate her parental rights. They did make substantial findings.
You apparently made a decision in your petition to proceed on the presumption as opposed to simply her ability, mother's ability, right?
No, Your Honor. We have had,
the petition lists various grounds for termination, one of them being the presumption, and then the others and some other grounds.
Correct. The petition was
The trial court only went on the presumption. Am I correct about that?
That is correct, Your Honor. The judge did not. The petition was inartfully drafted, unfortunately, because of time issues. So the focus was the prior termination, and then whether or not she has rebutted the presumption of palpable unfitness.
So did your petition cite as a separate ground simple palpable unfitness for independent?
No, Your Honor, it was based upon the prior termination.
So you're saying it's the county's position that the judge did not go on and say, and I will say that I don't think this is the clearestly written opinion I've ever read, but that the judge didn't go on and say, wait a minute, yeah, there's this presumption, but also there's a lot more here, and went on and analyzed it. But the county's position is that you're standing on the presumption. Is that right?
That is correct, Your Honor. And I'm looking... that is the main thing. When you look at the...
Well, the main thing or the... What's your position?
My position is that she's palpably unfit because of the prior termination and has not submitted sufficient evidence to show that she overcame the presumption of unfitness.
Okay,
thank you. And I think the record is very... So, go ahead.
Counsel, but just to be clear, below, appellant didn't argue that the North Dakota statute was not similar to the Minnesota statute.
Correct. We all accepted that the North Dakota...
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, correct, Your Honor. We all accepted that the North Dakota was a valid termination order that was applicable in Minnesota. In fact, I mean, when you look
Is that issue then properly before us?
Your Honor, I thought about...
The trial court...
Your Honor, I thought about arguing that, but I did not find any case law that talked about the failure to raise what I think Mr. Mack, I think properly allege as a constitutional argument. So in other words, even if I think this is a type of an argument that if the district court counsel failed to raise it, I think Mr. Mack has the right to raise it before you guys for the first time. So that's why I didn't argue that in my brief. But correct, it was not argued at all. We all accepted that it was a valid North Dakota, a valid termination order. And in fact, I think Judge Siegel, when you were asking Mr. Mack questions earlier, if you were to change the caption on that order and make it a Minnesota order from another jurisdiction, no one would question it. I mean, it's exactly the same type of an order. And I think that was a distinction between Mr. Mack's arguments and my argument, is he was focused on the specific language of the North Dakota statute. And I was focusing
it wasn't raised. I'm still troubled by the question I raised earlier. It seems to me that the statutory scheme envisions where there has been a complete adjudication in another state, laws similar to Minnesota on palpable unfitness, we shouldn't just bury our heads in the sand. We got to take a look at what happened there. And the legislature said, well, when that's happened once, we have a presumption of unfitness. But when it is a default proceeding, I'm a little more squeamish about this statutory framework. I mean, it's one thing where there's a contested matter in North Dakota and there's a determination of palpable unfitness, and another when it arises by default, it seems to me, and whether or not it's appropriate for us to, for Minnesota to rely upon that North Dakota determination when it is by default. I'm troubled by why you would want to proceed in that fashion, as opposed to simply say, she's palpably unfit, or these are other grounds for termination, and try your own case instead of relying upon a default judgment in the Dakotas.
Well, a default judgment, Your Honor, that again, if you look at the language of the order and the findings that they made therein, would have perfectly fit in any Minnesota courtroom.
I mean, I understand, those exact. But it wasn't the proceeding that was tested by testimony in a courtroom. It wasn't testimony subject to cross-examination. It wasn't the kind of proceeding that you would have confidence in based upon how it took place. Here, when it's by default, even though the trial court, based upon the paper it had, made factual determinations, to me, structurally, that's different than a hearing that results in the determination of the Dakotas. A true hearing, not a default hearing.
Right. Well,
it wasn't raised by anybody, but I have to say that I'm troubled by it. And so when I was troubled by it, I looked and thought, well, I'm sure there's another grounds for termination here, but I couldn't find it. I couldn't find simple grounds that she's palpably unfit, or one of the other statutory grounds that Minnesota has for termination. And I'm just kind of curious as to why this case proceeded in this fashion.
Right, Your Honor, it proceeded in this fashion because the Ms. Ness, the mother, has a long history of drug use. And there was allegations that she was using drugs here. And that's how we found out about her. That's how she came across social services radar. And that's what had us look into her background, find out that she had the TPR in North Dakota and had the voluntary transfer of the other five children previous to that, again, because of drug issues. And well, again,
so that those drug issues would have supported a different ground for termination, would it not?
Yes, it would. Well, I think it would be palpable on fitness because it's behavior that continues on and on and on. Right.
So,
but Your Honor, but I would, with respect, obviously, to you, if we don't look at North Dakota's order as a valid order, even though it was not, it was done by default, then really we would have to throw out any default order, even in Minnesota, because that would, Minnesota, we require, even if
I guess, my question isn't that. My question is, why didn't you petition and why didn't you press the trial court to make a determination that the mother was palpably unfit based upon the facts instead of relying upon North Dakota? I can understand why you may have, because no one raised the issue at trial. I gathered you're saying that if someone had raised the issue, you would have made sure that the petition would have been amended accordingly, sufficiently, so that you weren't relying just upon the presumption, but you're relying upon palpable unfitness.
I can't speculate as to what I would have done. I would presume I would have done that if it had been pushed by her trial counsel. But, you know, like I said, the, you know, the North Dakota order is very similar to, like, in Minnesota, as you all know, if there's a default situation, like tomorrow I have a default, I have a TPR trial, another matter tomorrow. There's speculation as to whether or not the father is going to show up there. I still have all my witnesses lined up to come in and testify about the bases for that TPR in the event he doesn't show up, because a default doesn't mean that I just say he's not here, therefore give us an order. We still have to prove up our petition. North Dakota, when you look at the detailed findings that that judge made, he did go into the record. He did not just simply say she didn't show up, she didn't participate, so therefore we're going to default her out, as you, and which would definitely then give you cause for the concerns that you're expressing. He went in and said the same thing that we're talking about here. She's got a long history of drug use. She's got a long history of unstable housing. She's got a long history of not seeing the child. And in that case, she didn't see the child for, I think, since the child's birth. So we're not talking about a situation where we have no findings of fact. We have a one-page order from a judge of another jurisdiction, have no idea what happened. We know what happened there because we can see from the record that the judge did look at everything that was that North Dakota was alleging, and found that it met the statutory criteria for termination of parental rights with sufficient evidence, not based upon not just based upon she didn't show up. And I think that's what your main concern is.
If, Francis, yeah. Are you aware of any case law where there's been a termination of parental rights in Minnesota by default, and then the presumption was applied, and saying that that's okay? I mean, because that, which would then help us answer that question. And I don't know. I mean, I haven't researched that issue. I don't know the right answer to that.
I did not specifically research that issue. I don't know. Yeah. So I think if you're asking, what I'm hearing you say is, so instead of forget about that's North Dakota, in Minnesota, do we have a situation where if we got a default judgment from Grant County and now we're here in Traverse County? And I did not look into that to see, but I, again, would in order for that other jurisdiction to pass muster, we have to make sure that there are specific findings of fact that are made, that there was looking into it as Minnesota law requires. And I believe that North Dakota law very clear, or North Dakota order very clearly complies with Minnesota's requirement that detailed findings be made before you terminate parental rights, even in a default situation.
Earlier, I'm sorry, go ahead, Chief.
Oh, you go ahead, Judge Klapacki.
Earlier, thank you. Earlier, I'd raised the question about whether there's a waiver here. And Mr. Mack made his argument. I'd like to hear your response to whether you agree that that it's properly before us.
If you had to press me on it, I would say no, it's not properly before you.
Because well, I am pressing you on it. That's
right. I would say no, it's not properly.
I mean, it just seems procedurally, from what you just told me right earlier, if it had been raised at the trial level, you would have made sure that the presumption wasn't the only ground that you were alleging for termination of parental rights here.
Right. The trial counsel Scott Dutcher, we all accepted this. I mean, he had the TPR order right from the beginning, and there was never a challenge to it and from anybody at all. And we just
understand that factual scenario. Mr. Mack, I think, made the argument that somehow this is like a constitutional item that can't be waived. And I'm not sure I follow that. I'd like to hear your response.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, originally a couple of minutes ago, I did say that I hadn't briefed it because I thought he had the ability to raise it. But, you know, now after we're going back and forth on it, I don't think it's a constitutional issue. I think it's simply a case law issue. Did a North Dakota order meet as a default order, meet the requirements of Minnesota's case law regarding default orders for TPR? And I submit to you that it did. And then therefore there isn't a constitutional issue here. It's not a due process issue, which would be the only one I think you would be raising. And therefore it's not properly before this court. So,
Counsel, just briefly, do you read 260C.301, the language or a similar law of another jurisdiction in subdivision 1B4, do you read that to modify the TPR language or only the language about transferring custodial rights to a relative?
I think it only deals with the termination, not a transfer of custody. We were not going forward based upon the prior transfer of custody because I believe that was a voluntary transfer. So
right, what I'm wondering is, does the clause or a similar law of another jurisdiction, does that modify the circumstance where a parent is palpably unfit upon a showing that a parent's parental rights to one or more children were involuntarily terminated? Do you read that to require or a similar law of another jurisdiction to apply to that language?
I think I'm still a little confused by what Your Honor's question is on that.
I'm sorry, I'm not articulating it very well, but that sentence in B4 has two different presumptions, right? One relates to termination, involuntary termination, and the other relates to a involuntary transfer of custodial rights.
Right.
There's an or between those two. And then at the end, there's or a similar law of another jurisdiction. And that is after the list of statutes relating to a transfer of custodial rights. Do you read the similar law language to apply to the involuntary TPR language or just to the custodial rights? I mean, you didn't address this in your your brief, neither party did, but there is a kind of fundamental question about how to read this statutory language given that or in the sentence, in the middle of the sentence.
Right. I would say because there's not a comma there in between the involuntary TPR and involuntary transfer of custody, but there is a comma before or a law of another jurisdiction, similar law of another jurisdiction, that the or a similar law of another jurisdiction applies to both the involuntary TPR and involuntary transfer of custody. So if it depends upon where the comma is placed, I think under grammatical structure. And I think, like, for example, if you had put the comma after involuntary TPR, the rights to another child were involuntarily terminated, comma, or that children's custodial rights to another been voluntarily transferred under Minnesota's law or another similar jurisdiction without a comma, then the or another similar jurisdiction would only apply involuntary transfer of custody. But since the commas,
subdivision 4, wouldn't that be set off by commas?
Well, there's
more. At any rate, it's a complicated question on to answer an oral argument.
Right. No, understanding what her question is, though, I think very clearly that or another similar law of another jurisdiction applies to both transfer of custody or TPR.
All right. If I could ask another quick question and then Judge Clap Hockey, if you proceed after, and I know we're running over a bit, but since I'm presiding, I get to do that, I guess, and we'll allow Mr. Mack some extra time as well. So if we were to agree with appellant and say, wait a minute, there's something wrong with applying the presumption in this case, whatever the ground might be, do we have the authority as an appellate court to say, wait a minute, but there's still lots of evidence even without the presumption? Or would we be required to reverse and remand? What's the county's position on that?
In fairness, Your Honor, I think since the record is very clear that the county relied on the fact that there was a prior termination in another county or another jurisdiction, and that she did not, we alleged and presented evidence that she did not rebut the presumption of palpable unfitness, that if this court makes a determination that we cannot rely on the North Dakota order for whatever reason, then I believe this case has to be remanded back. Because there is, I don't believe that you can say That, well, it doesn't fit this statute, but there's other statutes that it fit. Well, we didn't present that to the district court. Mr. Mack's client counsel, didn't address any of those issues. No one was prepared to argue those issues.
All right, thank you. And Judge Klapacki, did you
have
another question?
I just have one similar question. The statute references where parental rights were involuntarily terminated. And this gets me back to this default business. She didn't show up. Is this a true involuntary termination? Or did she just walk away and let it go? So I'm questioning about whether or not the statute really is appropriately here, in addition to the other arguments that have been made, an appropriate basis for termination.
Right. I believe as the court looks at the North Dakota statutes, I think as Mr. Mack indicated earlier, only refer to involuntary termination. They don't refer at all to
I know, but we're talking about Minnesota.
Right. I understand that. But if we're looking at whether or not North Dakota's law is similar to Minnesota's law, then we look at whether or not that was an involuntary, because that's your question, right?
Was yeah, here's my was question. If it had taken place in Minnesota and it was a default because she just didn't show up.
Right.
Would that appropriately be considered an involuntary termination as opposed to a consensual termination?
No, it would absolutely be a voluntary termination. I'm sorry, involuntary termination. Absolutely. Because she didn't show up. There wasn't an affidavit for voluntary that she was consenting to involuntary termination. There wasn't a petition alleging that the parental rights should be terminated on a voluntary basis. And the findings that were made by the district court in North Dakota were all based upon a involuntary or based upon the fact that she was still using drugs. She was still, basically everything but good cause that we would require. Because Minnesota, we can only do a finding, a voluntary termination if there's a finding of good cause. North Dakota's order was not a good cause order.
Okay. And in Minnesota, we have case law that says that there has to be a specific statutory grounds for termination, right?
Correct.
And so we're unable at this point to take this record and say, well, there's enough evidence here to establish some other grounds, such as palpable unfitness, because that's not what we alleged, and that's not what the trial court determined. It went on the presumption. Am I correct about that?
Slightly. I think there are clear grounds.
I mean, I'm slightly incorrect too. Okay, go ahead.
Right. I think that there is sufficient evidence on this record to show that Ms. Ness could be could be involuntarily terminated on other grounds.
I don't disagree with that, but without the trial court making that determination, we can't affirm on that basis, can we?
Correct. That's about to say. We did not allege anything other than the palpable unfitness because of a prior involuntary order that was not rebutted. So, well, before my note, my time is well over.
All right. I think we have to cut you off though, because it's
This is like two sentences. Your Honor asked earlier about the drug issues, about whether she had used drugs. If the court looks on page 14 of appellant's addendum, that is where the findings of fact were made about Ms. Ness's drug use, which started by her own admission into February of that year of 2020, and then the court's credibility issues with her testimony. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you very much. And Mr. Mack, you will have a few extra minutes for rebuttal.
Judge Cochran, I'd first like to address the or issue. It seems to me that it's logically unsound for the legislature to have passed a law that simply adopts the laws of another jurisdiction in a termination case, because the laws of another jurisdiction could be so dissimilar to Minnesota's, so that the similarity issue has to logically apply to the palpable unfitness presumption. Now, Judge Klapacki, I would like to imagine for a moment that the North Dakota law, or the North Dakota law either did not exist, or that the North Dakota termination did not exist. What would be the results in Minnesota? I think the answer to that is that had the county alleged other grounds, certain things would have happened that didn't happen. One, the county almost certainly would have relied on some of the other provisions here too, such as services being provided and not being taken up. That's one of the grounds. And certainly the county would have wanted much more involvement with this particular woman during the 6 months before we had to have a termination trial, but it didn't. So that my client was prejudiced in that regard. Now let me turn to another.
Let me stop you for just a moment. It seems to me the county has also been prejudiced the way this scenario went down, because nobody objected to the claim, or nobody raised the claim that that you shouldn't proceed under the presumption because of North Dakota not being similar for whatever reason. And so as a consequence, the county doesn't go ahead and allege anything other than the presumption, and the trial court doesn't make any determination for termination other than the presumption. So it seems to me like both sides are prejudiced by the way this thing was handled.
Well, I was about to address the issue that the North Dakota statute and its effect on the presumption was not explicitly raised in the trial court. I don't think that that has to be an issue on appeal. And the reason why is because we're talking about the applicability of a statute. And if the statute does not apply, if the statute, for example, is inapplicable, then it would be a denial of due process to my client not to have that examined before the Court of Appeals. And I think that would be what would be happening here if I couldn't raise that.
Boy, all kinds of rights can be waived, Mr. Mack. You know, constitutional rights can be waived. Everything is waivable. Why is this particular item not waivable? By the fact that it wasn't raised below, and because clearly the county was prejudiced by the failure to raise it below, because it didn't allege different grounds for termination.
But if you are losing your child under a statute which should not have been used, then it's structural error, because that's error of such fundamental magnitude that it affects and infects the case in such a way.
You have a case that
is prejudiced.
You have a case that stands for that proposition?
Frankly, I have plenty of them, but I don't have them right now. I had another case where we were arguing structural error on a fairly similar matter, but unfortunately, I can't go to my.
Okay.
Mr. Mack, your argument isn't as applied. You're saying she would be denied due process as applied, not the statute itself is unconstitutional, correct?
That's true.
Okay.
RDL argued that it was unconstitutional and it was close.
But going back to your point about the statute itself, you make a good argument that it would be unsound to, you know, accept a TPR from another state without considering the laws of the other state. But would you agree then that this language in, you know, B4 is not drafted very well? Because under normal rules of grammatical construction, it's not that not how you would phrase it to have that language apply to the first part of the sentence.
I think the answer to that is that if you have an ambiguous statute or a sloppy statute, you interpret it in the way that makes sense. And I think the way that makes sense here is to say that it applies to the presumption. I think that that's all that I have. I appreciate the court's questions and the opportunity to respond.
Thank you. Any further questions from the panel? Not seeing any. I want to thank you both. I know we pressed you a bit during this argument. Your arguments were very helpful. The case is now submitted, and we will issue our opinion within the statutory time period. And thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.